everyone, and welcome to Carnatic Conundrums. My name is Neha, and today I'm here in New York City with Aditya Prakash.
Hey, good to be here.
So Aditya is here at the Lincoln Center, and you're about to kick off your show with Akram Khan and his company, right?
Yeah, it's a show called Xenos. We've been touring it since February. It's an incredible experience performing with Akram and being a part of the creation process.
Mm-hmm.
And special to be performing it at Lincoln Center. Yeah, it's really exciting. First show in the U.S. So
you've been touring worldwide then?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So Aditya has been here about a week now. You had a concert in Brooklyn for Brooklyn Raga Massive last
week. Right.
So been doing a lot of New York City exploring.
Yeah, I have. We were touring in Canada and we had like a week off. So I came to Brooklyn and it was nice to be able to do a gig of my own material, more in the contemporary setting of
mm-hmm.
classical. And yeah, it's special to be able to traverse different types of genres within Indian classical.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm kind of exploring the traditional Carnatic concerts as well as the crossover genre contemporary stuff, and then collaborating with artists like Akram and,
mm-hmm.
and other great musicians. And it was nice to be able to do that concert for a change at Brooklyn Raga Massive and go back to some of my own compositions and like rework them with a different set of musicians. So,
yeah, and I think
special.
That's like what's very unique about you as a musician, especially as a young artist. You're known for your diversity within the entire Indian classical music space. You often say your music is heavily influenced not only by Carnatic music, you're Carnatic trained,
mm-hmm.
But Hindustani, Sufi music, and
yeah.
You definitely are able to, and even jazz, you're saying, right?
Yeah. I think for me, I grew up in LA and I heard so many different sounds. Like, I mean, my mother is a Bharatanatyam dancer. So hearing music was like all that I did as a child. It was just soaking within me. And I didn't know I was interested, but I guess it really became part of me. And so like she would work with flamenco musicians, she would do crossover collaboration things with different styles. So I already was exposed to these different sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember she did something with a gospel choir. And I thought, I always heard everything in terms of swaras and notes. So I always linked my language was Carnatic with other sounds I heard.
That's interesting because I grew up playing in orchestras, so I could read sheet music,
right.
But in my head, like I would read it and I'd be
right.
Like, oh, it's like Mappa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And then you're thinking that you're like, this isn't right, but that's the only way that I could make sense of it.
Exactly, and that's the same. Like I was in choir too, and I was just learning sheet music,
mm-hmm.
and I would always just write sarigama.
I thought reading sheet music was the hardest thing because it was so odd to me that you could just look and know what note it is, because that's
yeah.
not how it is in most other classical forms, especially
yeah.
like any Eastern classical music, you
right.
know, it's so based on intonation and just hearing the
note. Hearing the note, yeah, yeah. And that's what was a struggle for me to, like, I would have to listen and pick it up. But I think what the benefit is our ear training and
mm-hmm.
Carnatic music is so sharp that we're able to pick up things faster than most other people. But yeah, I guess reading music is a bit, it takes a lot of training and it's very doable, but like,
mm-hmm.
I'm so used to thinking in swaras and listening and then notating in my own way.
So when you kind of do these crossovers, I'm guessing it's a mix of both. So you have rehearsed music, but then you also have portions that are like improvisational. So, you know, how do you kind of traverse the two?
Yeah, with the crossover genre. So yeah, like I was saying, hearing all those sounds, and I didn't know, because I was focused on Carnatic solely,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, there's a repertoire that we follow, and I had all these other sounds in my head that I didn't know how to express, and this avenue, working in crossover
mm-hmm.
genre, it's kind of a space where there's not really a set pattern or set rule, so you can create your own kind of
mm-hmm.
style, your own voice, and I was able to compose. I can start composing, thinking about a guitar line, or if I heard some sort of different type of drum, not mridangam, I could compose something for that. And so it gave me space to compose a bit more and think about harmony, arrangement, and rather than thinking of melody as vertical, just thinking about stacking.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's nice to be able to write, compose lines, and of course, I mean, our both jazz and classical is very heavily improvised, so there's always room for that. And because I'm lucky to work with such great musicians, it's really special to give everyone their space to be free, and then that itself inspires us to like create and go in certain directions. To leave a lot of space open is really important, I think, because the music can take you in a direction you never thought possible.
So I'm sure, like, so you performed some pieces last week at BRM that you were saying that they were original compositions that
mm-hmm.
Your original band performed, but then
yeah.
you were performing it now with different musicians.
Right.
So it must have been, like you were saying, that to have that open space to allow different instruments or even
right.
different artists bring their own expression into it.
Yeah.
Like, I had a chance to listen, so I went back on YouTube and I listened to Ambika, and it sounded so different.
Yeah, yeah.
When I heard it there versus, like, when I heard it live with
yeah.
the different artists.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why it takes, like, some getting used to, because I'm used to hearing it a certain way. I wrote it for a certain way for a certain instrumentation, and this was a group that I've never wrote for, so it was really nice to like to be able to. I mean, at first you have to like kind of get used to the sound and
mm-hmm.
be able to let go that okay, this sounds different, but it's not necessarily bad. I mean, it's just a different sound, and it definitely opens up a space for something new to come out rather
right.
than what your like track pattern that you're used to following.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool in that sense.
So I think one thing growing up, a lot of us, you know, when we were being trained in Carnatic music, we'd be told, don't listen to other genres.
Yeah.
There's, I think a lot of times people say you need to have a very like strict classical training.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've had that, you can explore. But you kind of said, you'd mentioned that you grew up with both. You grew up learning Carnatic music, but you had the influence of other art forms as well. So, you know, I'm wondering, did that help your Carnatic music in any particular way, or was it more like an overall growth as a musician?
Well, I think the thing for me, I didn't really actually process, I kept those worlds very separate.
Mm-hmm.
I was like a Carnatic purist. Like I would only listen to like certain artists and like a handful, and I would listen to Carnatic music all day, and I wouldn't listen to anything else. Like, I didn't know who Red Hot Chili Peppers were. I didn't know who Eminem was.
I mean, I think I went through that phase,
yeah.
too. Like, I remember, like, specifically, like, on my iPod, like, on the school bus, I'd never let
yeah.
people look at it.
Yeah, yeah,
because
kind of...
I'd always be like, what are you listening to? I'm like, I don't want to explain this.
Right. Well, clearly, I didn't even have an iPod, so there's a generation gap here. So
I don't think that's true.
It was, like, an MP3 player, one of these tiny little things. And but, yeah, like... I was very hardcore Carnatic, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't even think the idea of like being inspired by other styles was an option for me. It's just like
as a Carnatic musician.
Yeah, as a Carnatic musician, it was only later on when I first the first collaboration I had was with Pandit Ravishankar.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I was introduced to North Indian music in a way that like where I actually tried to sing it.
Mm-hmm.
Sing his compositions, and I was exposed to it in a more broad way, and that was the first time I really became obsessed with another style of music besides Carnatic. Until then, it was only Carnatic, and that was it. And
and that was your senior year of high school, so it must have been like 17, 18, right?
I joined Panaji. Yes, I was 16.
Okay,
so I think like at the end of 11th grade or
mm-hmm.
something like that. But yeah, like he really opened my eyes to, and he was obviously doing a lot of cross-cultural music collaborations, and it was just, yeah, it opened my eyes to the idea that you can still, you don't need to forego your classicism just because you're listening to other music.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought, okay, the only way to be really serious about Carnatic is only listen to Carnatic and only do that. And yeah, it did help me go deeper into the Carnatic. And I think that's an important, I'm very grateful for those years, but I'm glad I also was exposed to different things, and I started becoming more receptive to different styles
mm-hmm.
of music. Because it gives you, and not necessarily that I have to use what I hear in Hindustani into my Carnatic concerts,
mm-hmm.
or use whatever I hear in jazz into my Carnatic concerts. I think it's still important to use your discretion and know when to use what, but just being exposed, it just opens your awareness, and I think that itself is really important.
Mm-hmm.
The different styles and different cultures.
So did you always know that you wanted to be a musician full-time?
No, actually I didn't. I just figured I would be like an engineer or a doctor, like my dad was. My dad was an engineer, and my grandma would always say, studies was like of utmost importance.
Yeah.
And I really couldn't care less. But I just thought I would eventually...
It would sort itself out.
Yeah, it would sort itself out. But yeah, I guess after being with Panditji, Ravi Shankar, seeing how he toured and like in style, performing at Carnegie Hall, Disney
yeah.
Hall, like when I was 16, 17, and going on tour buses, staying in hotels, and like seeing all the fans go after him after concerts,
yeah.
and like sold out shows, big venues. That was a big, like, otherwise before it was just like, I would see concerts in Chennai,
mm-hmm.
which is its own beautiful scene. It has its own aesthetic.
Yeah.
But I never seen the classical music on that platform.
Exactly.
I always associated that with Western classical or pop or rock or something. And to see it kind of became cool to me. Like, okay, this is something I'm proud about sharing with my friends. Because like you said, I was kind of shy about my Indianness. Because I was one of three Indians at my school.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely nobody was really into the Indian culture as much
definitely
as I
no
was.
No one was listening to Carnatic music
yeah.
except for you.
I was the only one who Shyamaguri Srinivas Iyer was.
Yeah.
So I was kind of, yeah, and even in choir, I wouldn't try out for solos. I was really scared to show my voice because I felt it was very Carnatic.
Mm-hmm.
And
accidental gamakam like slips out. And
it always definitely, the accidental gamakam still slip out.
Yeah.
it's in there. But, no, it was just, yeah, it was until that, after that tour, I felt really confident and proud about my heritage. And, I mean, I guess that's just how it is being a teenager growing up in the U.S.
You
wanted to fit in with the culture. And
mm-hmm.
it was, I always felt like, yeah, the Carnatic, the Indian culture that I was in when my mom used to come pick me up at school in the saris. And, like,
mm-hmm.
I used to be kind of, like, shy. But I think just being around that, touring and, like, performing at awesome places, it really made me open to the idea that I can be comfortable with this. I can,
yeah,
like you said, normalize it. And I was proud to share, like, I went on this tour, I sing Indian classical music, I do concerts, and I was ready, like, the next year I tried out for a lead role in a musical,
mm-hmm.
Beauty and the Beast, I remember.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was the Beast. I was just, yeah, I was more confident with my voice, and it was the way it was, and like I even did a lectum in 12th grade for my friends. They were like, we've never heard you sing the music that you do. Can you like do a workshop for us? We want to hear you. And it was, I remember feeling really nervous, but also excited. I wasn't embarrassed. I wasn't shy. I was really happy to talk about Carnatic music and
yeah.
share it with my friends.
I think as you get older, you kind of see that, you know, people are genuinely interested in
yeah.
learning about other things. Like, it's no longer, you know, as a teenager, it's very different. It's kind of,
it's
you also put some pressure on yourself and you're like, oh, maybe it's too odd. Maybe I don't want to share it. But then
right.
when you grow up, like, people are actually genuinely interested. And I'm sure, especially as close friends, they must have been so excited to see you perform.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, definitely there was a big change from middle school to high school. Yeah, you're always kind of criticized for being
mm-hmm.
different, and like you're made fun of in middle school maybe
mm-hmm.
For being different. But then later on, it's what really you embrace, and you take pride in that. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's just a process. I know a lot of other American-born Indian kids like me who felt the same way. It's just about, I think over time,
mm-hmm.
you just take pride in it.
It's funny, I feel like all of you guys grew up like in the greater LA area. Everyone who like now does it professionally and splits
yeah.
their time between the US and India.
Yeah.
So I'm always wondering, I'm like, is there something in the water? Like around, like Southern California?
You know, that was an amazing time in LA. Just
yeah.
like, there was...
Because so many people around your age group.
Yeah,
yeah,
so many people around your age group. And like, we would look forward to Tyagaraja days, Dikshitar days.
Yeah.
And like... it was just like, it was a big part of my life, and even the social aspect, like,
mm-hmm.
like we would equally look forward to going to those days to participate, listen to our friends, but also play basketball
yeah.
during the breaks and order Taco Bell and eat burritos. And it was just like a community. It was a beautiful community of Carnatic music in LA
yeah.
at that time. And I think it's really fascinating that there is so much talent in one one place at one time. Yeah, we were lucky to be a part of that era.
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned this idea of normalizing Carnatic music, and I think that's important because I think to a lot of Western ears, be it Carnatic or Hindustani music, actually a lot of non-Western classical styles, it's hard for your ears to get adjusted. Because
yeah.
It's not all set at, you know, say a 448 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting used to gamakas. And, you know, Pandit Ravi Shankarji did an amazing job. He kind of revolutionized putting Indian classical music on the world stage.
Yeah.
So taking from that, I'm wondering, did you draw any inspiration to normalize, quote-unquote, Carnatic music on a world stage? So I kind of see that in some of, you know, your original works. It's taking these Carnatic tropes, but
mm-hmm.
making it maybe a little more approachable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea of making it more familiar, more approachable,
mm-hmm.
is what really interests me. And I think, I mean, Carnatic music on its own is, it doesn't need to be made more approachable, but it's nice when people who are would possibly never hear it
mm-hmm.
are able to, I mean, they're able to, there's always a barrier between people, and if you're able to break down that barrier and allow them to receive
mm-hmm.
the music without feeling like it's going to go over their head or
mm-hmm.
it's too exotic for them to absorb.
Sometimes it's something as simple as the setting.
Yeah.
You know, performing at a theater versus...
Right.
Maybe a Saban Chennai.
Right.
You're just naturally going to draw a different crowd.
Exactly. And that's also an important thing. Or like making it more informal, talking a bit, like in the Carnatic format, it's just song. And then
mm-hmm.
there's less audience interaction.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe even small things like explaining what the song is about,
yeah.
or connecting. Maybe, like a lot of times I'll hear when people are performing to maybe not a Pakka Carnatic audience, they'll
yeah.
explain, oh, this is Raga Shankarabhadram, this is our major scale, and automatically there's a connect. You're like, I know what a major scale
yeah.
is. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's important to do, when especially when you have an audience who's uninitiated,
mm-hmm.
because eventually we don't want Carnatic music to just be, I mean, it will always be very niche, but it has a potential to
mm-hmm.
spread out and reach and affect more people, and I think North Indian music has done a good job of spreading out. I think there's certain reasons why it's more appreciated in the West, and I think the way it's presented, and
I think just the collaborations with the Beatles and
yeah, it's just yeah, it's like yeah, it's spread out really really wide, and I think
but that's exactly it. You have to find a way to bridge that connect
yeah.
originally
yeah.
to a certain audience, and then you can kind of draw them back in and be
yeah.
like, now that you know what this is the deeper classical version of it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You can't necessarily hit people with that at first go.
Exactly.
You can sometimes, I'm not saying
yeah.
that,
yeah, yeah.
but you know.
Definitely, and I think just even like, I noticed some people who came to my show, they said just the fact that I'm doing my music with the instrumentation that they're used to, like
mm-hmm.
drums, piano, bass guitar.
But you also had tabla.
Tabla, yeah.
And
so,
you had a Carnatic violinist.
Carnatic violin. So the fact that... yeah, Thano, exactly. The fact that we have these instruments that people are used to, that kind of sound, that aesthetic is
mm-hmm.
what they're comfortable with. But when they hear that in a different context, it just kind of opens up their mind
mm-hmm.
to the possibilities that other styles of music have.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned how you're kind of cognizant of Carnatic music and how it sits in the world space. So I think connecting that back to today's context and this current climate, we've seen, you know, the Me Too movement hit Carnatic music.
Mm-hmm.
And you were one, I mean, it's great because you're definitely a youth voice in our generation amongst Carnatic musicians. And, you know, you came out and you had mentioned, you've made some comments about, you know, how it's very important to be cognizant about the moment. And one thing that really stood out to me is that you said, what's most important is for people to be aware of their surroundings and understand that these things
yeah.
are happening.
Right.
Could you elaborate on that a little more?
Yeah, I mean, this stuff has been happening for so long, and it's about time that, I mean, we've all kind of kept it under the rugs,
mm-hmm.
and it's really unfortunate that it took, that it took so long for it to come out, but I think the fact that one person started it and more people feel comfortable,
mm-hmm.
it's really important to get the stories out, and yeah, it's really an unfortunate situation, because I feel like women are not getting, it's not just women, but
majority
women.
Of the people who've come out.
Yeah. They're not getting access, the same access to like arts education as we are. I mean, imagine if your teacher or a mentor or somebody sexually abused you or verbally abused you. The space to receive the art is too traumatic. And I've known many of my friends after this movement, some of them have come out, my closest friends, tell me their stories. And it's just so, so sad to see that they couldn't learn from one of their favorite teachers because something traumatic like that happened. And it's really not fair. And they, I think having a position of power in music has really just kind of overlooked all rules and sense of human decency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is an important time where we stand strong with the values. Values come first, and that really defines you, not your musical skills. That's
mm-hmm.
secondary. And I think this is an important time to really address that.
Yeah, and I think, like you were saying, more than anything, it's about creating that safe space.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, just talking about world music, you know, connecting Carnatic music and putting it on this global context, you know, as much as some of these things might, it's unfortunate that these things have happened, but it's good that's coming out now because we're kind of keeping up with the world, if you know what I mean. You see that's not only happening in Carnatic music in other fields, so, you know, it's kind of showing that although we might be this niche genre of music, like real things, like we are a part of, you know, the growing socio environment that we operate in.
Totally. And yeah, it's important that to state that it's just not happening only in Karnataka. It's happening everywhere. And it's just an important movement. And Karnataka music is as relevant as anything else. And so it's important to stay relevant and keep up to date.
So, you know, I have to ask you, what's next?
What's
for
next?
You? You've accomplished so much. In so many different genres. So, you know, I'm just wondering in terms of where do you see, you know, maybe not just yourself, like the future of the type of Carnatic music that you're trying to develop and, you know, share with the world?
Well, I'm still learning. I'm still in the process of always discovering and especially going deeper in Carnatic music. I'm really lucky to have great gurus and mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And I love going to Chennai and delving deep into the classical. And I'm also currently, I just recorded an album with my band at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
I was really lucky that UCLA sponsored the recording and the mixing. And it's really nice that they really care for their students. I was a graduate of UCLA.
Right.
And they really are looking at my progress. They want to see us grow and do well. And it really meant a lot that they invested in my project. And so that's another thing I'm working on, as well as touring with Akram. So these kind of three worlds are kind of intermingling, and I'm trying to find my balance, my footing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have. I'm still, there's always finding the right amount of balance, because it's easy to get sucked into that world,
mm-hmm.
what you're working on.
So do you go through phases then? Like you'll be for these
few
months, I'm going to focus on solely Carnatic music, and the next few months is going to be about like composing for my band and, you know, perfecting that.
Ideally, it would be nice to keep a balance at all times,
yeah.
but it naturally veers towards that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But Carnatic is always there for me, like as a practice, as my warm up routine. It's just every day. I can't avoid that. It's just part of me, and that's the way. I think it should be because it's my main language that I use in all other settings.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it tends to work that way when you're kind of in a certain zone, it's hard to step out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fine. That's just the nature of things, and you can't always avoid that. So
I have one final question for
you.
So you mentioned that you grew up in, you know, Southern California, the greater LA area, at a time when it was really, you had this great community. It was a great time to see Carnatic music in the younger generation really come up in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you have any advice for, you know, some kids who are in their early teens, you know, late teens right now, who are thinking about pursuing Carnatic music or even pursuing, you know, music full time.
Yeah. I think first order of business, if we're really serious about Carnatic or music in general, is to like listen a lot and listen to a lot of music, absorb a lot of music, and don't be like I felt like I wish I was more open to other styles at a younger age, and I wish I would learn other things. But to be open, to hear different music, to be curious, to never lose that curiosity, and I think it's really important to maybe even learn a different style of music as well,
mm-hmm.
as a passion, as a hobby. I mean, you don't need to delve deep into it, but it's something I wish I did, and I did a bit later in life, but it definitely paid off and has really helped me. So I think, it's just about staying curious and never losing that drive to keep discovering. And even within like the basic exercises that we do, to find something new in it. And
mm-hmm.
And one thing some of my mentors tell me is repetition, over and over. It seems really boring and really unnecessary. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's just a simple phrase in your raga. Just keep repeating it like 10 times and something else will come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've been doing, and it's really an interesting and eye-opening exercise.
I feel like a lot of people have also told me that unless you repeat it, like, let's say 100 times at home,
yeah.
it won't come out on stage.
It won't.
Because it has to be second nature for it to come out on
exactly,
stage.
Exactly, exactly. And even when you repeat it over and over, it changes shape and
yeah.
something new comes out. And that's another important
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Loved having you on Carnatic Conundrums.
Same here. Love being here. Thank
once
you.
Again, we're with Aditya Prakash here in New York City.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Naya.
Nadi naram yehi annapurne.